In the spirit of reconciliation, our team at TPA acknowledges the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community.
We pay our respect to the elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to all First Nations people today.
Welcome to Talking Shit by Toilet Paper Australia with your hosts, Admin 1
and Admin 2. Our podcast is dedicated to calling out nonsense in the media and politics
so we can figure out and navigate what the fuck is actually going on.
Take it away, sir.
Yep. So, welcome back to Talking Shit by Toilet Paper Australia. And this is an episode that I've been looking forward to for quite a while.
You've kind of built your whole page around it. So, it's going to be an exciting one to get into. It's going to be a guide to understanding Auspol.
It will be, yes.
So, we're going to be explaining a lot of the important things just so you can easily navigate what's going on. I think we said that in the intro. We're going to help you navigate what the fuck is going on. So, this is our first proper attempt at allowing that, I guess.
It absolutely is, yeah. So, essentially, we'll be going through how preferential voting works, how the voting system works. When you go into the polls and they ask you to number a whole bunch of boxes, we'll tell you what that means. What are you actually doing? And how does that relate to the election? And then also, we'll give you a bit of background into who the political parties are, because if you're numbering boxes, you'll want to know why you're numbering them and who you're numbering them for. So, hopefully you enjoy it and hopefully you find this really informative, because this is something that we've been really, really wanting to do for a while, just putting everything into words. So, Australia's voting system is unique in many ways compared to other countries. So, probably the most distinct thing is you have to vote or you get a fine. I actually don't know how much it is, but I believe it's nothing too much. It's a bit of a minor inconvenience.
My partner copped the fine one time. I should know it, but she had COVID. So, she's just like, I think she saw the line and had COVID and was like, I'm not partaking in this.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll put it in the show notes. Probably not. Yeah. But yeah, you do get fined. And I think it's a good thing that we have. We see, obviously, in the US, sometimes people can be elected off barely any votes. So, I think to have the whole country voting is it's a pretty cool feature.
Yeah. And I think something on top of that is we have a different voting system compared to the US or the UK. So, in the US and the UK, basically, whoever gets the most votes, not a majority, but the most votes, wins that seat. Wins the congressional votes if it's in America for the Electoral College, or in the UK, just wins their seat in Parliament. Now, probably the UK is the best example, unlike the US, because they have a very similar parliamentary system to us. So, their government operates very, very, very similarly. So, basically, everyone votes and all they do is just tick a single box and that's their vote done. Then, they count the votes and whoever's got the most out of all the candidates in that particular seat, kind of like how we have seats here, they win that seat. Now, the problem with this is in the UK, you can quite literally, if there are 10 candidates and they all get a very similar amount of the vote, you can get 11% of the vote and win an election.
Mm.
Like, you don't need a majority of votes. You can literally win by just having the most. Now, the problem with that is 90% of the people either don't know you or don't fucking want you.
Yeah.
Like, so that's a very, very big problem. Now, in Australia, we have a slightly different system. So, if you're old enough to vote and if you have voted, you'll know that when you go into a booth, basically what you do is you number all the boxes top to bottom from one through to, let's say there's 10 candidates to 10. Now, a lot of people actually do that and they're not quite sure what that means. But basically what that means is you're preferencing where your vote goes. Now, how that works is, well, basically the reason why it works is because once all these preferences are counted, you get one candidate with a majority of the vote. Now, we'll explain how that works. So, basically, if the candidate that you vote for as number one, after everyone's number one candidate is listed out, whoever finishes last, they're eliminated. And then all of the ballots, everyone who voted for them, the people counting the votes will sort who their number two candidate was, and their vote will go to those people. Mm. And then so on and so forth until there's only two candidates left. And whoever's got the most votes or the majority of votes out of those two will win.
So, to paint a picture with that, say you've got a couple of the, maybe say independents been eliminated in this sense.
Yep.
You maybe come down to your Labour and Liberal were your third and fourth preference.
Yep.
That third and fourth preference is now the 1v1 effect that you are essentially having. Yep. So, your three becomes your one.
Exactly right. Yeah. So, for example, like you've said, if you put Labor and the Liberals as Labor number three, Liberal number four, they're the only ones left. And none of your favourite candidates are left. Whoever's higher on your ballot gets the vote.
Mm.
That's basically it. So,
and we were talking about an example before the pod for, let's just say my local is Higgins. In Higgins, we had Michelle and Anaraja.
Yep.
The vote went to 40% Liberal for preferential. But when it got down to a two-horse race, she actually was in front.
Yep.
So, the effect of being most people's number two actually put her out on top. So, that is an example of how it works. And I think that's why it works really effectively is because when we nail it down to the two-horse race, we do sometimes get a Green or an Independent that has mm-hmm. a lot more backing, essentially,
yeah.
in the vote than they otherwise would.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is with the race in Higgins, so basically, the Liberal candidate got 40% of the vote.
Mm.
Just out of whoever, all the voters voted number one, and 40% of the voters put Katie Allen from the Liberal Party as number one. Only 28% of people put Labor's Michelle Anandaraja as number one. So, as a result, there wasn't an overall majority, so they went to preferences. So, basically, all the candidates from the bottom up were eliminated and their votes were sorted amongst who they put as number two, basically.
Mm. So, if it isn't clear yet, when you're numbering on the ballot, that shit is important.
Exactly right.
So, you're not just filling out the boxes, throwing it away and grabbing a democracy sausage. These numbers are actually very yeah. crucial
yeah.
to deciding who the winner is. You might think the four or five yeah. means nothing. No, it actually can have a huge impact.
Yeah.
And I think this is where it's super interesting because our country allows for these independents and Greens options to kind of get a seat off yeah. the back of this rule.
Yeah. Well, importantly, if you put your onions underneath the sausage, first off, you lose your democratic right to vote. Oh, sorry, I don't make the rules, but-
What if you add mustard? Because that's what I do.
Oh, mustard's fine.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah. But yeah, basically, the most important thing is both who you put first and who you put last. Because at the end of the day, the only person that's guaranteed to not get your vote is the person you put last. And that is why it is so, so important that if you don't want a Liberal government, is that you put them last.
I was waiting. Is he going to be so deliberate in putting Liberal last? Yeah, or are you even going to allude to it or just flat out say
yeah,
it?
Yeah, because basically, as every candidate is eliminated, it'll go to your number two, your number three, your number four, based on who's left. But the only one that won't get it is your last candidate, because eventually it'll come down to two people and the second last will get your vote.
Mm.
Not the last. So, this is why it's important that you don't have to vote for Labor, because there are a lot of people who follow TPA who are very disaffected with the two major parties. From a progressive point of view especially, we have a lot of Greens that follow the page and they don't like the Liberal government, but they're also not satisfied with Labor for probably some very, very valid reasons. To stop a Liberal government, all you need to do is put them last. You can put Labor like second last, and that means, well, you know, even if the Greens don't get elected or your progressive candidate doesn't get elected, you'll still get someone who's maybe less shit than the Liberal Party. Because I know some people describe Labor as
the war of the least shit, essentially.
Yeah, exactly right. So, you can have your cake and eat it too. We don't have a voting system like America or the UK. There's no such thing as a spoiler vote in Australia. You can vote for whoever you like, and if they don't win, you can get your next favourite candidate or your next one after that. And if there's one particular party that you don't like, like especially out of all the parties, just put them last and they won't get your vote. And really, it's as close to a win-win situation as you can get. It's not perfect, don't get me wrong, but it is so much better than having literally only being able to vote for one party and making that like a spoiler vote.
Well, I think you said recently in America, 98% is for Republicans versus Democrats.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Only 2% is the independents. Whereas I think this is where the main benefit comes in, because we have a different array of seats in Parliament. This is where these Greens, Independents, the non-major parties essentially,
yeah.
can have a bit of power because they kind of sit in the middle, don't they?
Yeah, exactly right. Because basically what you can do is just off preferences, because the Greens, the Independents, they almost never come first in terms of primary vote. They almost always win off of preferences. So basically, they're the most preferred candidate over the Liberals or the Labor Party, for example. More often the Liberals, a lot of the Independents and a lot of the Greens have actually won off Liberal seats.
Mm.
But that's the reason why, is just because there are so many people who would just rather, you know, they prefer someone else over the major parties, more or less.
Yeah. So, let's say in an example, we get a Greens MP.
Yep.
From preferential voting, mm-hmm. both the Libs and Labor, you know, Greens were, let's say, everyone's second in the entire suburb. Greens get in.
Yep.
When it comes to the lower house parliament, mm-hmm. they're in there legislating on all the stuff yep. that matters to us. It is then up to the major parties, essentially, to appeal to these guys to get their votes, essentially, because they yeah. do have the swing vote, essentially.
It's more effective when there's a hung parliament. So, a hung parliament, I think we've already discussed this, mm. is when neither the Labor or the Coalition
have a majority.
Get an absolute majority of seats. There are 150 seats and you need at least 76. It's when both parties, neither major party gets 76 and they need to work with another party to make up that extra margin to get the majority of seats. So, at the moment, like the Greens and the Teals kind of really can't do much as long as Labor votes the same on all issues in the lower house. In the upper house, however, that's where it gets interesting because the Senate in Australia there's a different way of voting there. Basically, every state gets 5 seats and the territories get 2 seats. And how that works is basically it's geared so that no party can, or very rarely does a party get a majority in both houses. John Howard was the last one to do it in 2007. And the problem with this is that the major party that holds both the Senate and the House of Representatives can pass whatever laws they like.
Hmm.
Literally, they can pass anything.
All right, we've shot off onto a really technical wave there. So, yeah. we're going to need, on all those things, Senate.
Yep.
Explain that shit. Lower house, explain that shit.
So, I guess the whole thing about like the Senate and the House of Representatives, it historically goes all the way back to like when the UK Parliament or the English Parliament was created. So, there was a House of Commons. Basically, the whole place was decked out in green because that was seen as like the color of the people, basically. It was like power to the people. Like the commoners get to make the laws, but the rich people kind of get to check them. Make sure it's all fine. Doesn't affect
them too much. They do the check and the balance.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and yeah. Like, you know, just make sure the poors aren't getting too, you know, like.
I can feel some listeners like starting to reach for the tinfoil. This is where, this is where you start to realize that.
I think it's more a hammer and sickle they'd be reaching for. Yeah, basically, that's why it was created. But in Australia, it has more or less been changed to act as sort of a check and balance, to not allow for absolute power of one party to pass whatever they like. So, it's geared so that basically no party can get a majority in both houses. It is very, very hard to get a majority in the Senate just because you need so much of the vote.
Essentially, what this is doing is you're kind of filtering through.
Yeah.
The bills that probably necessarily shouldn't get through, bills are essentially before laws. It's a proposal to make a law.
Exactly right.
And what we're essentially hoping for in this sense is when it's going through the lower house,
yep.
if it's kind of fucked, if it gets the vote anyway, it stops at the upper house.
Yep.
And we only get the really important stuff that I guess appeals to the country makes it through.
Yeah, exactly right. And in the Senate, because no major party has the advantage or an overall majority, they have to talk to the crossbench and say, and the crossbench is basically just a collection of minor parties that are not Labor and the Liberals. Or they're basically the parties that are not the biggest and second biggest. So it's got like the Greens, One Nation, the Independents, all those parties, the Lib Dems, United Australia Party. The government has to work with them to try and pass laws to basically get a majority of senators to pass on the law, to be made into law.
And so, your crossbench there is why preferential voting at the heart is so good. Because in other countries, those people are practically redundant.
Yeah, exactly.
For us, they have some influence.
Yeah, exactly right. So, unlike the US where the Democrats and the Republicans are basically the only two parties, let's be realistic. There's only one or two independents in a Congress of like 600 people. Here, there's a much bigger diversity of parties, which are very strongly represented in the Senate because it allows for minor parties to get in. And as a result, people are more likely to be heard because their minor parties get into office. So, it's a good way to sort of moderate bills out or to get a compromise that sort of works for as many people as possible. How to vote cards are irrelevant. It's a recommendation. You can vote however the fuck you like. I have not taken a how to vote card ever. You can vote however you like.
Story time on a how to vote card.
Yeah.
So, you're walking up to an election.
Yep.
You got your two major parties. Their representatives are throwing these cards in your face.
Yeah.
And you're pretty much breaking everyone's world here saying you don't have to follow that.
No, you don't have to follow that. A how to vote card is a how we recommend you vote card.
Yeah. How the Liberal Party would like you to vote.
Well, literally, like you can literally just walk in and preference whoever you like. I've been doing this ever since I turned 18. I've been voting since the 2016 election, and I've never once taken a how-to-vote card because I know who I want to preference first. I know who I want to preference last. And I basically look at the parties and I'm like, I like them. I like these guys a little bit less and a little bit less and a little bit less and so on and so forth. Your preferences are up to you. How to vote is just how we suggest you vote. And sometimes some of the minor parties, like the most notorious one is the Restore Democracy sacked Dan Andrews party. Mm. So they ran in the seat of Mulgrave and also in the Victorian election. And funnily enough, they actually put Labour above the Liberals, I think.
Oh.
I think it was they put Labour above the Liberals.
As if.
But they didn't preference... I'm not sure if they preference Labour above the Liberals, but they didn't preference Labour last, which for a party that has developed its entire identity around hating the Victorian Labour Party, more specifically Daniel Andrews, that does not rub well with voters who did not like Daniel Andrews. Because...
Of course not.
They didn't. So...
I mean, your entire marketing spiel is off the back of, we hate this guy...
Exactly.
He is as bad as it gets. Yeah. I don't know why they just don't do like a sack whoever the person is that they put last.
Yeah, exactly.
That's obviously
right.
Worse than Dan Andrews.
Yeah. So, how to vote cards. Literally, you can vote however you like. You can put numbers first to last, however you like. But again, the most important thing is that you put the party you like least. And hopefully for all the voters following TPA, put the Liberals last. That is the only way you can guarantee that the Liberals do not get your vote. Because when it comes down to the last two candidates, they're going to look at who you put second last and who you put last. And the person you put second last is the last person that gets your vote. Do not ever
put
the Liberals above last. That is all it's as simple as that. That is all you can do.
Very passionate stuff there. I feel like it's funny if someone's come from the Punters Politics episode. It was very objective in the way, like, I'm not to any party. Let's just get money out of politics. When it comes to admin one at TPA,
it's
anti-liberal. And I think that's kind of refreshing too, to have someone that's like, very out and about with who they're preferencing. You're very grateful for the preferential system.
I fucking am, absolutely.
Because that's how you get to express yourself, and maybe we don't have to see you on the side of a street with a board holding up, don't vote Lib.
Yeah.
Vote you Labe.
You might see it if things get particularly lean, but I think it's definitely something that is a lot more powerful than what people think. And if you know how to use it, that is when it becomes effective.
We're going to talk a little bit about the majors, minors, independents. So, we've name-dropped a couple of them so far.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a bit late to explain it now, but it's all in the same episode, so it's all fine.
I mean, I think it's probably fair if we're telling you this is how you need to vote, you need to know who you're voting for.
It's very important.
You need to know, I guess, who the biggest parties are, what they stand for, what they claim to stand for, and what they actually stand for. And I guess their prospects coming up, like how realistic is it? What are the barriers facing them? And we'll go from there.
Right. So, what do the major parties stand for then?
Well, there are two major parties that everyone knows, the Liberal Party or the National Party, who always run in coalition, and the Labour Party. So, we'll start with the Liberal and National Coalition. Obviously, you know, not my favourites, but traditionally, the Liberal Party was actually established, I believe, in the 1940s by Robert Menzies, he was one of the people who established the Liberal Party. That was out of the ashes of the United Australia Party. Basically, what happened was, after World War II, the Liberal Party was just... Or the United Australia Party, the old United Australia Party, not Clive Palmer's abomination, basically died. They were not cutting through to voters at all. John Curtin, who was the wartime Prime Minister for Australia from the Labour Party, was basically seen as a hero, and everyone liked him, more or less.
Okay.
So, they needed a party which, you know, was... They wanted to be viewed, I guess, as a classical Liberal Party, you know, rights of the individual, free market, free trade, with, I guess, so-called conservative characteristics. I don't like using those buzzwords, but that is how it's been seen, and that's kind of, you know, what they would like to see themselves as. More and more over the last few years, especially maybe in the last, I would say, 10 years after Tony Abbott took over, especially, the Liberal Party has aligned itself a lot more with the Christian national sort of rhetoric. Now, the Liberal Party on its own does not have enough seats to govern in its own right most of the time. Only a few times has ever happened. They always need the National Party. Now, the National Party is basically seen as the country version of the Liberal Party, whereas the Liberal Party usually only runs in metropolitan electorates. The National Party usually only runs in rural electorates. Now, they usually work together to varying extents. It varies from state to state. So, Federally, they always work together. The Prime Minister is always from the Liberal Party and the Deputy Prime Minister is always from the National Party when they're in government. So, that's always been a deal that they've had.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even when they have a majority, they typically do dissent. Or when the Liberal Party is in a majority in its own right, which is rare. John Howard last did it when he voted out Paul Keating. He's still elected to have the National Party in his cabinet, more or less. So, they always work together and they're basically one and the same. In Queensland, they actually are the same party. So, there's no Liberal Party and there's no National Party. It's the Liberal National Party of Queensland. Mm-hmm. Whereas in WA, they actually run against each other often.
Interesting.
So, not only do they not sit in a coalition, they actually actively work against each other in a few electorates as well. And there's varying extents to which, like, you know, they do work together in other states. In South Australia and Tasmania, the National Party is non-existent, so the Liberals tend to run in the rural areas too. And in Victoria, they do kind of, and in New South Wales, they sit in coalition.
Okay. So, how do they stand in 2024 then, the Liberals?
Yeah, so-
How have they aged since, I guess, wartime that you mentioned?
Yeah, well, I guess they've become more and more Christian. Mm. They've become less secular than what they used to be. There's always this kind of notion that the Liberal Party, you know, needs to, and they always talk about the Liberal Party going back to the party of Menzies. Like, I don't know if they're ever going to get back to that. Like, they always kind of, I mean, they always kind of phrase themselves as being classical liberal. They've always been conservative and they've always kind of, you know, in my opinion, made the rights of the individual worse. And they've always made the standing and the fortunes of the average person dwindle in favor of the rich.
Which I was going to allude to is essentially now our guide for understanding who favors what kind of people is that the Liberals tend to be big businesses,
the Liberals,
the kind of consensus you hear a lot of the time.
Well, the Liberals nominally call themselves the party of small business and they always, you know, call themselves the, you know, the party of like sensible economic management. Literally, Labor leads on every single metric in terms of out of the two, which one is better at running certain things. Liberals only usually lead consistently on two things, the economy and defense or national security. They're the only two. And basically, it's one of those things where if you look at the data and you look at what's actually happened, the opposite's true. The big one is for me, especially when it comes to housing affordability, John Howard was probably the biggest catalyst in terms of making housing unaffordable in Australia.
Yeah.
Because it allowed for big property developers and it allowed for big business or large investors to take over the property market because capital gains tax was halved in 2001, I believe it was. And since then, the entire housing market's been bought up by property investors. Not the entire housing, that's an exaggeration, but one in three Australians own an investment property.
Staggering numbers.
It's a staggering number. And there are people like Ben Fordham, I believe, had a host or had a guest on his radio show, 2GB, where someone owned 287 rental properties and said he couldn't afford a rent increase.
I'm paying nearly $7,000 a property per year in land tax.
Can I ask you out of interest how many you've got, David? How many rental properties do you own?
Well, okay, 283.
283 rental properties?
Yeah.
What?
I've worked hard for that.
This is a direct result.
What?
And that's the thing. This is a direct result of the halving of capital gains tax.
Mm.
That's obviously a small part, but I guess the thing is the Liberal Party stands for people who, you know, are the only ones that can really afford this and the only ones that can really like benefit from this, which are the ultra wealthy. And
how would Labor contrast to that? Because the Liberals essentially are saying is, come make money with us.
Yeah.
But for the Labor, it's almost like we'll help you get by ideally is
the
premise they go for.
A bit of background for the Labor Party. So, this is a good sort of segue into that. They were established in 1901 and they've been sort of like basically ever since Australia was federated and they've been continuous ever since. Now, to varying extents, they've represented the union movement. They always have had a very, very, like that's basically the lifeblood of the Australian Labor Party is trade unions. And they've always kind of, this dichotomy of Labor and the Liberals, or the Liberals and Labor, respectively, are like the haves and the have-nots of society. So, Labor traditionally has always represented the working class. Do they now? That's up for debate. A lot of people and a lot of followers actually would say they don't. But consistently, Labor has, you know, where there's been a lot of overlap. And I think saying Labor and the Liberals are the same, exactly the same with no difference, is just flat out wrong. They are very similar in a lot of different things. But Labor has consistently supported regular people over small business more of the time. not all the time, and you know, not most of the time, I don't think, but more of the time, they've been better for ordinary people. I mean, the Stage 3 tax cuts are probably the biggest example of that, where they scrapped the tax cut for the wealthy and the top 10, top 8, top 2% of society, and instead favoured a greater tax cut for people outside those brackets.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, like those, you know, those tax cuts, you know, they're not a be all end all solution to everything, but it is just an example of Labor generally working more in the interests of regular people than the Liberals. There are probably parties that may do that a little bit better, but yeah, Labor does a lot more than Liberals. Now,
so hearing that, we go down the natural path of the working class, you would think is in favor of Labor.
Yeah.
But I think you were telling me a bit about how they do vote pretty much the same on most things, really. This is where the major parties get a bit tricky to navigate.
Well, here's the thing, because when Parliament votes, a lot of the time you'll hear that the opposition is voting against the government. You'll hear that Liberals are voting against Labor. But a lot of the time they actually vote together on a lot of things. So there have been a lot of tax cuts, there have been a lot of oil and gas subsidies that have been passed. Labor and the Liberals often team up to vote for a lot of mining exploration, a lot of oil and gas exploration. They vote together on these things. And when you've got two parties that actually control a lot of seats, like, I mean, the crossbench isn't going to do anything. So,
Well, that's when they become irrelevant.
Yeah. And
that's when preferential voting, this essentially we were saying before, it's helpful when we have independents and greens in power.
Yeah.
When Labor and Liberal are opposed, when they're together, they're pretty much unstoppable.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of the time, they do vote together on a lot of different things.
Mm.
So, they do become unstoppable there. So, I think that's where, you know, people become disaffected with the major parties, because a lot of these things, especially when it comes to the environment and when it comes to a lot of foreign conflicts, like, they vote together on these things. And people become disaffected by that because these things mean a lot to them.
Mm.
Like, take what's going on in the Middle East right now. This affects a lot of people, and this is something, an issue that people are very passionate about. And Labor and the Liberals tend to, you know, support the status quo. And the average voter who cares about these sorts of things is like, these two parties don't represent me, and they go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to be the biggest threat for the major parties.
Yeah, I think definitely in a trend that we're moving towards is where the miners and independents come in.
Yeah.
Is that, I think, in the most recent election, I think you dropped a stat recently that we had the lowest votes for the two major parties.
Yeah.
So, we're in a direction now of moving towards having minor parties, independents, actually speak on behalf of us.
Yeah.
And I guess now is like your time to kind of look into who these parties are. As for the miners, do you want to tell a little bit about who they are?
I guess the biggest minor party, and I say minor party, even though they're, you know, definitely the biggest, and they often contend with major parties now, is the Greens. So, the Greens were established, I believe, by Bob Brown, and they were purely, as the name suggests, an environmental party at the time. A single issue group voting entirely on environmental issues. But since then, they've expanded their portfolio to become a very broad progressive platform. So, they talk about things like drug reform, crime reform, police reform. They also talk about, especially nowadays, housing. So, there are, you know, they've got quite a big support amongst young people who are most affected and most vulnerable when it comes to housing. And also when it comes to cost of living as well, they've been probably leading the charge when it comes to calling the supermarkets out and holding them to account.
Yes, obviously calling for the inquiry on Coles and Woolies on how you made a billion dollar profit each when we're in a cost of living crisis.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think that's, you know, something that the Greens really kind of really want to rally people around, is that, like, hey, we support the most down and out people and the most vulnerable people. And most vulnerable people nowadays do tend to be young people between the ages of 18 and 35. And when you look in, say, Victoria and New South Wales, this is showing in terms of the number of votes for the Greens. So, the Greens regularly, actually, amongst the 18 to 35 demographic nowadays, in some polling firms, they regularly poll ahead of the Liberals in this demographic. The Liberals are third in this demographic. Now, the biggest barrier facing the Greens is that they don't really appeal to old people very much. I believe in one of the most recent Resolve polls, they polled ahead of the Liberal Party with about a quarter of the vote, 25 to 30%, which is huge.
Mm.
Huge for a minor party. And this is in an entire state of 18 to 35-year-olds. But then when you get to the 55-plus demographic, that number drops off to about 5%.
Yeah, and this is where voting becomes tricky, because it all is determined by the population, how many we have in each of these areas. And then Yeah, I guess you're seeing is like there's a heavy influence sometimes in voting for the older demographics to keep things the way they are, or at least look at things very short term, which I think Labor and Liberal prefer.
Yeah.
When we're talking Greens, it's very forward thinking.
Exactly right. And
so
that's
it's action on climate change, and it is trying to have houses affordable for some people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the Greens are kind of bringing in a very uncomfortable conversation that we need to have, in that the Australian dream is dead. There's no doubting that. And this narrative, and we've kind of spoken about this off pod before, of the aspirational Australian does not exist.
Mm.
It never did, in my opinion. But they're finally bringing it to light that it actually doesn't exist. It's not something that is, you know, even attainable.
I guess you best explained the
aspirational
Australian.
Australian. Yeah.
You best explain the aspirational Australian by essentially it's someone that says like you can have this if you work hard, but they just keep moving the goalposts further and further away, so you can never actually reach that goal. So and you can own a property, you can become safe, but it just
creeps
up getting more expensive.
Well, the thing is about the aspirational Australian is it's a voting demographic that doesn't exist, but you can tell people that you sit under it. And the Liberal Party is very good at it. They always, always, always use this as their tool. Now, they always say this, especially when it comes to action on housing, because housing is the biggest mover of social mobility in Australia. It's the biggest catalyst. You own a house, you own something that's about $1 million or $500,000. And that is only really going to go up in terms of property. And in terms of tax cuts, it's like the Liberal Party always wants tax cuts for the wealthy. Whether or not Labor does is, you know, up for debate. But when we're talking about the Liberal Party and the notion of the aspirational Australian, it's like, let's keep things the way they are.
Mm.
They keep the idea of being wealthy close enough to the average Australian, but far away enough so that they'll never reach it. So they're like, you can get there. Like, you know, you can get there. Our policies will make you get there. You're like, you actually won't. You never will.
Mm.
Like, we're not going to tell you this. You never will. But we'll keep it close enough to you so that you think you can. And they're like, well, and when you get there, you'll have all these nice tax cuts and you'll have all these nice things. You're never going to get there. Forget it. We're not going to tell you that though, but we'll make it as nice as possible for you. You'll look at it and it'll be attractive enough.
Yeah. We're going to put a blanket over HEX debt and paying off your car and a house loan and everything. And I think this is where it's super important to explain the why is that why people are, or why politicians are legislating on keeping things good for the rich is because there are votes to be won there.
Exactly.
That is at the heart of all of this, is they're going to legislate, they're going to essentially tailor their whole party around where there are votes to be won to stay in power for their term.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think we get a bit messy, don't we? Because the Greens are coming with so much force, but it's all for change in the future.
Yep.
A lot of the time, the two major parties are very focused on, well, what can we do right now to stay in power?
Yeah.
So, it's all about winning votes.
Yeah. And it's almost a business model in a way.
Yeah.
In that, you know, you need to get in, you need to get in the next election, you need to get your return from getting the number of votes. And it's always so short-sighted, especially because our terms are only 2.5 to 3 years.
Mm.
Like, you think about the UK, their terms are 5 years. I think that's too long. I think 4 years like the States has, and it's set every 4 years they vote. I think that's very good. But the fact is that we have an election cycle at the federal level that is only 2 to 2.5 years, because, I mean, realistically, the maximum is 3 years and a campaign cycle is 6 weeks. So, realistically, you're only getting 2.5 years of proper policymaking.
Mm. And you've spoken before about essentially once you get a third into your term, there is always a drop off.
There always
is in people's preference of you.
Yeah, exactly.
So
right.
We are in this constant pattern, which is why I think we're catching on to there are other parties that exist. Maybe it's time to give some new people a shot.
Exactly.
It's
right.
Because we are so used to this pattern of, popularity dips. I'll bring this in, try and win some votes back. The polls start looking pretty good. Okay, I'm ready to take on election time.
Yeah. Because the thing is, major parties, when they're in opposition, they go on an attacking stance. They try to attack the government as much as they can. But as soon as they get into office, they go into a major shift into a defensive mode. They try to defend their policies. They try to defend their position as well. They're just thinking about, how can I keep myself in government for the next election? And I think that's a bit of a flaw that major parties are starting to creep into.
Yeah. And I think on that as well, if you're only attacking the other major party, it does leave the door open a little for someone else to kind of slip in and go, well, we actually care a lot about. I think there's a good example to bring up with Punto, who we had on the podcast last week. He said how Monique Ryan de-seated Josh Frydenberg, who was previously the Treasurer of Australia.
Yep.
Because he couldn't answer what he was going to do about climate change. And she said, this guy doesn't know shit. I'll do what you guys want.
Yeah, exactly.
And she crept in and did it. So, I think that's where the door is open for people while they're just attacking each other.
Yeah.
For someone else to swoop in, maybe take a seat.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think that's definitely something, you know, look at your vote, look at your voting records of your MPs, but also look at, you know, what minor parties there are in your electorate.
And we will talk about in part two how to look at voting records.
Exactly.
Because we can talk forever about who these people are. Yeah. They say a lot. They do a lot different.
Yep.
So, we'll definitely get into that stuff too. Did you want to touch on the independents at all? Because, you know, you've got some favourites like Jackie Lambie down in Tassie.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Jackie Lambie starting, she's got her own political party now, Jackie Lambie Network. But effectively, I think she has run as an independent previously. Independents can range in terms of their own political views. They're independent. They have their own agendas and they're not tied to any political party. Now, there's, I guess, two types of independents. There's your true independents that are not aligned with any party. And then there's also your perceived teal independence. These are parties, or these are independents, not parties, that have really run almost exclusively in Liberal seats. So, these are like your Monique Ryans, your Zoe Daniels, your David Pococks. These are groups that have run in traditionally conservative seats that want progressive action on climate change and government transparency. They run under the colour teal. The theory going is that they want green action in a Liberal electorate. And what's the colour between blue and green? It's teal.
Really so, breaking this down, aren't we?
Well, that's that. That's the theory going around. But, you know, it works quite well, is that they're neither green, they're neither, you know, blue, but they're that sort of, you know, happy medium for, you know, a traditionally very wealthy electorate that, and traditionally very powerful electorates too, that want action on climate change. And again, they've almost exclusively run in Liberal seats and they've only had success in Liberal seats. So,
and to tie that back in, when you are doing your preferential voting, this is where it comes in handy to say, well, I've got Liberal that I'm kind of on the fence about.
Yep.
Teals look after this everything that the Liberals do, but they're all also, I care about the climate.
Yeah.
They do too.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll put them ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're actually finally getting your avenue to the best of both worlds.
Exactly right. And also, like, the Teals have run, like, and they're kind of like a loose collection of independents. They're not a party themselves. They're all independent. They have run candidates and lost as well. So, again, you don't have to vote for Labor to get rid of the Liberals. You can put the Teals first. Just remember to put the Liberals last, because they may not come first in the original primary count of votes, but eventually, due to those preferences, they might come out on top. So, just make sure you put the Liberals last.
I want to get a... I'm going to, like, just every time you almost say that, I look over the proof. So, like, we need to get, like, a little tick counter going for every single time. Counter. Like, a little ding. I think you're on, like, a count of, like, 8 or 9.
Oh, yeah.
Producer's going to cut, like, 50 of them.
Wait till you see the page's history.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Well, at least you're out and obvious with who you're with.
Well...
I respect that.
I think that's the thing, is if you want, you know... Well, I've always been anti-Liberal. I've been pro-Labor to various extents. I'm probably now more broadly pro-progressive. Like, I oscillate between Labor, the Greens, progressive independents, and the like. And I'm like, if you want anti-Labor content, if you want anti-Greens content, if you want anti-progressive content, turn on the fucking TV. Open a news... Like, fucking look anywhere. It's all in the mainstream press. And the thing is, they're media organisations. They have it in their constitutions oftentimes to have fair and balanced journalism or to fairly cover all sides of a story, but they don't. And that's the most insidious thing. It's so dishonest that they're saying things like we're unbiased, but they're fucking not. How can you, as, for example, the Herald Sun, have gone through the last 8 election cycles and been like, we've done our independent analysis, and again, for the 8th time in a row, we've thought the Liberal Party is the best one. No one independently thinks that 8 times in a row.
Yeah,
I don't independently think 8 times in a row that the Labor Party is the best group. There have been times when they've been not, they've been shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have not voted Labor every election. I have several elections, but I haven't voted for them every election. But the thing is, I'm open with my bias. I'd like to think I'm a progressive person, and that's what the page is for. I'm, you know, we are independent people. This is an independent page. We answer to no one, so we can be as biased as we like. So,
and there's clearly an appetite for it. I mean,
yeah,
just hitting 50,000 followers is pretty good validation to say that people feel similar.
Well, I think that's just a quick, you know, segue to say thank you to everyone for, you know, 50,000 followers. It is a absolutely huge milestone, and to have 50,000 people think that, you know, there is a place for progressive discussion. Because that's the thing. It is progressive discussion and progressive think pieces, and just also to have a bit of a laugh at the state of politics and the state of media. I think that's a really big testament to the community that we've built,
mm-hmm.
and the community that you've built as a following as well is absolutely nothing short of incredible. So honestly, thank you from both Admin 1 and 2 to get us to this milestone.
Yeah. And hopefully we continue to do the things that you want to see.
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
Yeah, it's important that now, I guess, that you've got a bit of a foundation there. We want to keep representing the people.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think
we want to keep, as soon as these comments come through, we want to share them.
Yeah,
we want to have a laugh at the state of politics, because I think you alluded to it before, when there is all this news media.
Yeah.
On the episode last week, we covered it. It's all covered in ugly, boring jargon.
Yeah,
we want to talk about in plain English that it's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Politics
right.
is hilarious.
Yeah,
and
it
actually matters.
Yeah, it does. And just filtering through the stuff that doesn't matter as well. You know, like, again, we just want to make sure that we're getting the message to people that, you know, there is a progressive option that benefits everyone. You may not agree with everything the page says, but there is a progressive option for you. And all you need to do is take a look at voting records, take a look at what politicians do, because the candidates that you may think from maybe what a more traditionally conservative point of view represent you or represent free values or freedom or whatever, they actually don't. And there are better candidates across the aisle, not just in the Labor Party, but in other parties as well, that will actually represent you. You will be pleasantly surprised. Just take a moment and listen and take a look and see what they do, not just what they say. And I think that's really powerful. I think that's really important.
And in part two, we'll get to how you can see what they do.
Exactly
right. Because
that's
very important. But that is your part one on a guide of how to follow Australian politics.
Exactly right.
We've got a lot more coming.
Yep.
So
part two, we'll be covering, I guess, how you find out what the politicians do. And also, how to keep yourself informed. This is basically a playbook as to what I do. And you can do it too. And I think it'd be very important, because especially if I can do it, and it is so, so simple. I work full time. I do a ton of stuff outside of it. It takes 2 seconds, just a quick Google search, if you know where to look. And here, we're going to tell you where to look.
And I promise people are going to clap for you when you share these little findings that you have on your own.
These are good. And your MP,
what's happening in electorates.
Your MP, they do a lot different from what they say. So stay tuned for that.